Chapter 17, Math Club. October 29th, Earth. Tyler, Chantel, and I were eating lunch outside on the school steps around the traffic circle. It was the end of October, but we were having one of those weird Cincinnati late autumn heat spells where the weather warms up to 70 degrees for a day or two before diving back into the 40s. This could be the last warm and sunny day until spring, so the circle steps were packed with lunch-munching pupils. I had sketched my magical fountain on a piece of notebook paper, and my friends were making fun of my pathetic artistic abilities. Tyler reached over to point at something, and jelly oozed off his sandwich and onto his pants. We couldn't help laughing as his desperate attempts to wipe it off only smeared it and made it worse. I felt great as I sat there laughing with my friends, instead of worrying about upcoming battles, angry kings, outlandish prophecies, or how I was going to spend the rest of my life as a prisoner. Don't get me wrong. Mirth and all its magic are fantastic, but I have never appreciated how great it is to live in the real world and hang out with real friends until now. "You seem to be enjoying yourself, Mark," came a voice from in front of us. I looked up to see Veronica Myers looking down at me. "And that is not at all what the fountain looks like," came another voice from behind. I swung around to see Nancy Wellington. I stood and said, "Hi, guys. You know Chantel, and this is Tyler." Tyler awkwardly stood up while desperately trying to hide the jelly stain with his lunch bag. Nancy glanced at Tyler and Chantel and said to me, "We need to talk." Veronica added, "But not here." Now, I need to explain something. Jumping back and forth between worlds can be confusing. You need to deal with different bodies, different worlds, and different times. Narayana and I had already had our fight on Mirth, followed by 2 weeks of working, living, and talking with each other. The whole incident at the dance was settled long ago on Mirth. However, the dance was just the night before last, here on Earth, and seeing Nancy brought back a slew of hurt feelings. I felt my rage sweep back in and said, "Yeah, you wouldn't want to be seen talking to social misfits like us in public." "I don't care about that. But I do think we need someplace more private for this conversation," snapped Nancy. "And someone like you might not realize that strangers tend to walk up to popular people every few minutes just to say hi," added Veronica. I raised my hands and said, "Hey, I'm sorry. I'm still upset about our misunderstanding about the dance."
"Geez, get over it. It's been like 2 weeks already," groaned Nancy, before casting a panicked glance at Tyler.
I said, "Don't worry, Tyler knows all about Mirth. Hey, you should come to our math and science club on Friday night. Chantel and I will be there, and everyone there knows about Mirth. It would be the perfect setting for our conversation."
I swear that I have never seen such a disgusted expression on anyone's face before in my life, even when my sister saw someone eating snails at that fancy restaurant on Mom's birthday.
Veronica said, "No, thank you. I have far better things to do on my Friday nights."
Tyler piped up, "It's not just math. There's science, too. We call it the Math and Science Club, and even have a teacher."
Nancy laughed and said, "I'm sure you do, but why?"
I answered, "Because the more advanced math and science we know here on Earth, the more powerful magic we can perform on Mirth." That seemed to stop both girls in mid-complaint. "Besides, our teacher is Ms. Dada," I added with a smug grin.
"Are you saying that Terra has been teaching you two how to increase your magical powers right here on Earth?" Nancy shouted before guiltily looking around.
"Okay, I'm in," whispered Veronica as she hissed at Nancy to keep her voice down.
"But we're not calling it Math Club. From now on, we're going to call it Club S&M, because anyone who would willingly teach or study this stuff on a Friday night has to be either a,"
Tyler interrupted her with,
"a scientist or a mathematician, of course. Club S&M is a terrific name."
Veronica stared at him in disbelief, but Nancy just shook her head, laughed, and asked, "What's your number, Mark?" I gave her my cell phone number, and a moment later, my phone dinged twice with texts from the two girls. Nancy said, "Text us with the address and the time. We'll see you there." They had no sooner stepped away when someone walked up to Veronica and asked,
"What is Club S&M? Can I come?"
She leaned close to him and said in a hushed voice, "Sorry, it's invitation only." Then she turned back to us and said, "See what I mean?" Tyler put his hand on my shoulder and whimpered, "I can't believe that Nancy and Veronica really are Narayana and Versera." I said, "Of course they are. I already told you that. Why would I lie? I thought you believed in Mirth, especially after meeting Chantel." "Yeah, well, I do believe in the whole alternate reality planet with magic and mythical creatures, but I thought you were exaggerating about Nancy and Veronica." Chantel giggled and observed, "You do realize that you just asked the two most popular girls in the 8th grade to go out with you this Friday night, and they agreed and gave you their numbers. Not bad, Mark. Not bad at all." "Yeah," I marveled as I stared at my phone. "What just happened?" I was the first to arrive for Club S&M and was so early that Mr. Narwani and Ms. Dada were still eating dinner. Ms. Dada's eyes grew wide when I told her that Nancy and Veronica were coming. She asked me to wait in the living room while they cleared up. I sat down and reread my history report. I was planning on handing it to Mr. Narwani after our meeting, but wanted to go over it one more time. I don't think I've ever been prouder of a report, and particularly not a history paper. The doorbell rang, and I plopped my report at my usual spot at the dining room table. Mr. Narwani had gone to his study to grade papers, and Ms. Dada was carrying the last of the dishes into the kitchen. She asked me to answer the door, and I spent the next 10 minutes greeting my friends and welcoming Nancy and Veronica to the club. Ms. Dada had picked up my report and was skimming through it by the time I made it back to the table. I suddenly felt uncomfortable and wished she would put it down. I'm not sure why I didn't want her to read it, but it felt like something that should just be between Mr. Narwani and me. I introduced her to our newest members, and she set my report down to shake their hands. Why do old people always have to shake hands, anyway? Whatever the reason, I used the opportunity to snatch back my report to keep it far away from prying eyes. Ms. Dada opened the meeting by saying, "Welcome, everyone. I had planned on continuing using George Gamow's book to teach you about imaginary numbers, but Mark seems to think that learning trigonometry would be more fun tonight." What was she talking about? I have no idea what imaginary numbers are, but they sound kind of cool. I am, however, confident that nobody has ever thought that trigonometry was fun. Why did Ms. Dada set me up like that, especially in front of Nancy and Veronica? We then spent an hour learning about triangles, solving equations, and graphing curves. Let me be perfectly clear. Trigonometry is not fun. Let me prove it to you. Trigonometry is pretty much all about right triangles, which kind of explains the name. Start by drawing a dot on a piece of graph paper. Then draw a line straight down from your dot to the x-axis. That's called the y-side, or just y. Now draw a line along the x-axis from 0 to the y-side. Guess what? They call that x. Finally, complete the triangle by drawing a diagonal line from your dot to the open end of the x-side at 0. That's called the hypotenuse, and I have no idea why, but it sounds as Greek as my last name. Boy, I am glad it isn't called the Panagopoulos, or that my name isn't Marius Hypotenuse. Can you imagine the grief I'd get? Anyway, it also turns out that mathematicians came up with a special name for the number you get when you divide y's length by the hypotenuse's length. They call that the sine of the angle formed between x and the hypotenuse. They call the amount you get when you divide the x length by the hypotenuse the cosine of the angle. Oh, and the angles always seem to be assigned Greek letters like alpha, gamma, or theta for some reason. I found this to be enlightening because I finally realized that Veronica was right. My friends and I were on the dangerous path of becoming mathematicians, who are obviously deranged people who spend their Friday nights dividing the sides of triangles for no apparent reason. Ms. Dada wasn't through, though. She drew a circle on a piece of graph paper and used a protractor to scribe lines from the center of the circle to the edge. Then we had to calculate the sine of each angle. We divided the length of the y side of each triangle by the hypotenuse. This was easy because the hypotenuse of all the triangles was always the same length. It was, after all, just the radius of the circle, which she conveniently made 1 inch long. She then made us write the angles along the x-axis of another piece of graph paper and plot the values of the sines of those angles on the y-axis. It made a wavy line which looked like a sideways S. This was sort of cool, but totally not worth all the time we spent working on it. "Has anyone ever seen a curve like this before?" asked Ms. Dada. Malik joked, "Yeah, I see them all the time on spaceship control screens." We all laughed because we knew what he meant. Spaceship control screens always had sideways S-curves like these drawn on them. "You're right," said Ms. Dada, which surprised everyone. "Those are called oscilloscopes, and they are used to display and measure waves. Sine waves form the basis for all kinds of science. Sound waves, light waves, radio waves, and TV waves are all sine waves. So are X-rays, microwaves, and gravity waves." Malik said, "Okay, I still don't entirely get why this is so fundamentally important, but I'll agree I always wondered why there were squiggles on spaceship screens. What I want to know is why Mark wanted to learn about it." As odd as it might sound, I was wondering the same thing. I just sat there with a confused expression on my face like everyone else until Ms. Dada came to my rescue. She said, "I'm not sure why Mark is so interested in sine waves, but I couldn't help noticing that he plotted one in his history paper." I was in my chair, slack-jawed, and wondering what she was talking about. I had never even heard of a sine wave before tonight, and to be honest, I'm still not sure what they are. One thing I do know is that I did not draw any in my history paper. Ms. Dada reached for my history report and asked, "May I draw on this?" The answer was, "No. I had worked on that report for weeks and was planning on giving it to Mr. Narwani in a few minutes. I did not want anyone ruining my work. But how do you say no to a teacher?" I croaked out a weak, "Okay," and stood up to see what she was doing. I nearly fainted when Ms. Dada opened it up to a page near the middle and drew a sine wave on the map on that page. She sat back when she finished and said, "See? A perfect sine wave." "Wow, that is a neat trick," Nancy said sarcastically. "So, what does it mean?" I couldn't speak. All the blood had drained from my head, and I felt like I was going to faint. Ms. Dada reached for my hand and asked if I was all right. I nodded, and she helped me sit down while sending Veronica into the kitchen to fetch me a glass of water. It took me about 10 minutes to pull myself together enough to explain the report. All the time, I just kept staring at the map while my friends became more and more concerned. "It has to do with Mirth," I finally whispered. Then I took a deep breath and explained what I had found. Ertish asked me to do some historical research after he learned that I remembered my Mirth dreams. I began searching historical records for significant spiritual, religious, or cultural events involving the number 7. I enlisted Mr. Narwani's help because he is a historian and, well, I needed the extra credit to pass his class. There was a murmur of tentative chuckles and a "smooth move" comment from Veronica. I discovered that eras of significant social change involving the number 7 happen across the world regularly. The earliest one I could find was in the Indus Valley around 3160 BCE, when a religion formed around the 7 chakra. This spread throughout India and the Far East, and is still a core part of Hinduism and Buddhism. The next was when the Egyptians began believing in the 7 souls in their Middle Kingdom, which became a vast empire and spread their culture. This happened about 1923 BCE. Then the Romans ruled the known world from the 7 hills of Rome around 686 BCE. In approximately 551, the legendary King Arthur went on his quest to unify 7 Britain kingdoms, which would eventually become a global empire and spread Christianity around the world. And finally, Cincinnati was founded on 7 hills in 1788, which was when I suspect local 13-year-olds began dreaming about fulfilling a prophecy involving 7 magic talismans. Now, each of these movements occurs throughout a few centuries to 1,000 years. Sometimes the eras overlap, but most of them seem to fade out and leave a gap before the next one begins. Mr. Narwani warned me that calculating the length of time between any 2 or 3 eras by selecting arbitrary dates would be nothing but meaningless coincidence. He was very clear about that. However, finding that all five contain years which are precisely 1,237 years apart, is a pattern. Yeah, that's right. 3160 BCE, 1923 BCE, 686 BCE, 551, and 1788 are all exactly 1,237 years apart. Now everyone in the room was silently staring at me. Veronica and Ms. Dada were rubbing their arms as if they were cold. Chantel and the guys had all heard this before and were silently cheering, but they were still wondering what this had to do with what Ms. Dada drew. Nancy broke the silence by saying, "All right, I admit that gave me goosebumps, but enough of the ghost stories. What does any of this have to do with trigonometry?" Her skepticism seemed to shake everyone out of their trances, and their moods lifted for the briefest of moments. I spun my report so they could see the map, and answered, "Because the dots on this map are the locations of each event. Ms. Dada just drew a sine wave which passes through every one of them in chronological order from the Indus Valley 5,000 years ago all the way to present-day Cincinnati, and they are evenly spaced on her curve if you accept that these events can only occur when the wave is over land." Boom! Talk about a mic drop. Nobody moved, and even Nancy Wellington couldn't come up with a witty comeback.